2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Honorable members, distinguished participants, while agroecology systems draw on natural synergies and use of locally available resources, transitioning to the model initials some cost at the outset and requires support. Meanwhile, smallholders and particularly women struggle to access the credit they would need to move beyond substance farming. It is therefore imperative that investments that are channeled towards agriculture are accompanied by robust mechanisms to prevent any misuse of public resources and reach the intended beneficiaries, especially small-scale farmers. In this regard, honorable members, we have a responsibility both at a national and regional level to ensure that we promote agroecology agriculture systems for sustainable food supply. Through our oversight function, we must interrogate our national budgets and foreign contributions to ensure that they are channeled towards agriculture development and climate change adoptions. Further, we should provide effective checks and balances to the executive so that investment towards the sector yields the desired results. Therefore, I'm happy that this joint meeting has been organized today so that we can interrogate these critical issues. Honorable members, distinguished participants, as I conclude, let me take this opportunity to thank our esteemed resource persons who have accepted to engage with us on this subject during our committee session. I am positive that at the end of the meeting, we will all have a better understanding of agroecology and that we as parliamentarians need to do both at national and regional level to promote agroecology for the sustainable food systems. I therefore encourage honorable members to actively participate and engage our resource persons on this and any related issues in order for this session to be of maximum benefit to us as a region, as a SADC region as a whole. With these few remarks, it is now my honor and privilege to declare this joint meeting, the Standing Committees on FANR and TIFI, officially opened. I thank you. We go to session one, expanding investments and agroecology in Southern Africa for sustainable development and climate adoption. Honorable members and distinguished participants, we have five resource persons with us this afternoon. The first presenter is Ms. Teresa Anderson from Action Aid International, who is going to make her presentation virtually. Her presentation is centered on agroecology as a sustainable resource to climate change, international and regional experiences. The second representation will be done by two people, Mr. Joseph Nzinga, who is the coordinator of a small-scale farmers forum in Eastern and Southern Africa, and Ms. Irene Lebros, program manager for the same organization. Mr. Nzinga is presenting on agroecology from the perspective of the smallholder farmer. Presentation number three. The presentations on research and agroecology will be delivered by Dr. Cliff Glamin, who is the executive director of the Center for Coordination of Agriculture, Research and Development for Southern Africa. Mr. Martin Mucholo, consultant under the EU-funded project for a company called Sejrom, based here in South Africa, will present on regional and national investments in agroecology gaps and opportunities. Last but not least, Dr. Louis Hove will make his presentation virtually, which is centered on programming and support towards agroecology in Southern Africa, good practices from other regions. I now invite and allocate 15 minutes each to Ms. Teresa Anderson and Mr. Joseph Nzinga and Clifford Dalem to deliver their presentations. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the Joint Standing Committees for the invitation today. I would really like to start by congratulating the Chair on the visionary introductory comments that he made at the start of the session, which gives us hope for a courageous future and a courageous parliamentary committee to be able to take the steps needed at these critical times. I would like to give my overview on the behalf of ActionAid International, which perhaps you know, we're an international federation of, we're an NGO working in 45 countries for the advancement of social justice, and agriculture and climate change are very much part of our day-to-day bread and butter. And agroecology has been a key part of our strategic response to this challenge of climate change. I've just been told that my mic sounds very quiet, so I will... how is this? Does this sound better? Okay. So I hope that this sounds better. Okay, good. So just to start, as the chair mentioned, the impacts of climate change on agriculture are very significant, which is the reason for much of the discourse today. Agriculture is the basis of global food security and a source of livelihood for 1 billion people. That means 1 in 8 people around the world have their livelihoods dependent on agriculture. But it is the backbone of many economies, especially in Africa. And agriculture is highly vulnerable to climate impacts, as every single farmer in the world knows and is experiencing changing rainfall patterns. And these have significant effects already on the crops being produced. However, in addition, droughts, floods, cyclones, typhoons, hurricanes, rising sea levels, and soil salination are all incredibly impactful and harmful to production around the world, particularly in Africa. And we see as a result crop failures, hunger, poverty, loss of livelihoods, loss of food security and impacts on local and national economies. And as a consequence, we're all aware of the escalating rate of rural to urban migration and the challenges that people of across the generations are facing when they cannot find work, either in rural areas or in urban areas. So as we know, Africa is particularly affected, but we also know that because climate change compounds the consequences of inequality, this means that marginalized people, people in poverty, women, people with disabilities, ethnic minorities, and indigenous peoples are particularly affected. And we know also that agriculture has a major contribution itself to climate change. Agriculture and food systems are a major source of the world's greenhouse gases. After fossil fuels, in fact, and energy systems, agriculture has the second highest impact on climate change. It's thought to be between 20 and 30%, although some studies actually say that this can be as high as 40%. And the causes are deforestation and significantly the production of synthetic nitrogen fertilizers, because to produce these nitrogen fertilizers, machines need to burn a lot of fossil fuels in order to take nitrogen out of the air and put them into soluble form so that they can be applied to soil. That is an incredibly energy intensive process, requiring large amounts of fossil fuels, which has major impacts on the climate. And then the application of those synthetic nitrogen fertilizers on soils actually leads to massive loss of soil carbon and the release and degradation of that soil carbon into atmospheric CO2. So there are a number of ways in which synthetic nitrogen fertilizers are contributing to climate change. In addition, within the agriculture sector, we of course have livestock emissions, transport, in the global north, particularly energy is used to heat greenhouses, to grow food. Food waste itself also has significant amounts of emissions associated with it. And so all of these together contribute to agriculture's outsized impact on climate change. And of course, it is the countries with the most industrialized systems of crop production and livestock production that have the highest emissions. And it's also interesting to note that more land is used globally for animal feed and livestock pasture than is used for growing food for humans. And beef, as well as other ruminants, are the animals with the highest greenhouse gas contribution. So we're talking here about agroecology, and that is because, as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has found, agroecology has many climate benefits over industrial agriculture. I'll say a word on the IPCC. You may have been aware of a number of reports about climate change that have been coming out about the impact and consequences of climate change. But in 2019, there was a major research study, well, a major assessment of all of the climate research relating to land and agriculture that really came out strongly recommending that agriculture and food systems shift to agroecology for multiple reasons. Firstly, for adaptation reasons. Agroecology, through its use of compost, manure, and green manures, mulching, etc., it really improves soil structure, which is key for healthy crops and water retention. Agroecology also improves natural soil fertility, including the small fungi, the small bacteria that actually themselves contribute fertility to soil and plants. Agroecology also requires large amounts of crop diversity, and that diversity spreads risk and means resilience and the ability to adapt to climate change, because if you're growing several different types of crops which require slightly different conditions, then it means that when the rains fail or the floods come, you at least have some crops that are likely to survive. And that also grant you resilience to pests. As I mentioned about soil structure, agroecology really means efficient use of water and efficient water retention in soils, efficient ability to manage water. And as we know, that this is really, really critical in times of climate change, because if we have shorter rains, that means that even the little amount of rain is more likely to stay in the soil and enable a longer growing season. It allows soil to stay damp for much longer and crops to grow much longer, and you'll get more of a crop because of your soils being able to retain that water. Similarly, if you have rich, healthy agroecological soils, when floods happen, that means that your soil is better able to absorb water. So that means you're actually more resilient to drought, more resilient to flood as well as drought. And agroecology also confers resistance to pests and disease because of that diversity. So it's a critical strategy, as every farmer knows that the rainfall patterns are becoming more and more unpredictable and irregular. And so healthy soils conferred through agroecology is an absolutely essential strategy, as well as the diversity to cope with increased unexpected pests. In addition to the benefits that agroecology provides to farmers themselves, agroecology provides benefits to the whole planet by avoiding the fossil fuel burning required for the production of synthetic fertilizers. It also avoids that soil carbon that we talked about earlier, degrading to CO2, and it also avoids the release of nitrogen dioxide, you know, an intense greenhouse gas that happens when you apply fertilizers to soil. So it really cuts emissions associated with agriculture. And it also reduces the deforestation pressure that is largely associated with large-scale industrial agriculture. So multiple climate benefits in terms of mitigation. But there are also socioeconomic benefits too, because especially for low-income smallholder farmers, it helps farmers avoid the costs associated with buying pesticides, fertilizers, and seeds. It avoids the concentration of land and wealth in fewer and fewer hands. It provides health and biodiversity benefits. And now this is particularly critical with the Russia-Ukraine war leading to very high prices of fertilizers. Fertilizers are becoming unaffordable for farmers, and farmers around the world are likely to face steep crashes in yield now with in the coming months and the coming year, the growing season, the current season and the next season, due to high prices of fertilizers. And so it is urgent that farmers actually get to understand what alternative strategies they have available to them, provided by agroecology, to help them maintain soil fertility. Now, due to limited time, I won't be going into this graph in detail, but it's just to give you a sense of the principles of agroecology. Agroecology is not just stopping fertilizers. Agroecology means really using a range of techniques, a range of principles, really sharing knowledge so that farmers themselves can adopt these techniques and use knowledge instead of chemicals. And so there are a range of principles around agroecology that I encourage you to look up, developed by the UN Committee on World Food Security, the CFS, High Level Panel of Experts. It's important to also say that as we start to transition from industrial agriculture systems towards agroecological systems, we need to make sure that that transition is based on principles of a just transition, and that these agriculture shifts do not adversely affect the farming communities, the 1 in 8 people around the world, or actually end up increasing hunger and inequality. So we need to make sure that as shifts happen, they address and do not exacerbate inequality, that they transform systems to work for people, nature, and the climate, that we ensure inclusiveness and participation in planning processes, and that we also ensure comprehensive planning and policy frameworks, particularly training and knowledge sharing for farmers as part of that strategy. So in conclusion, we must note that agroecology provides direct climate adaptation and socioeconomic benefits for farmers, and climate mitigation provides benefits globally. In addition, the IPCC Special Report on Land and Climate calls for a shift to agroecology. And it's really important to remember that scaling up agroecology means shifting and ensuring that farmers have the necessary skills, knowledge to undertake those activities, and that extension services can roll out and support that, and that they are gender responsive. And if you do that, then agroecology can be really a cost-effective investment rather than spending, you know, the vast portion of your national agriculture budget every year on subsidizing fertilizers, because you have to subsidize fertilizers year and buy them year after year, whereas the training, you can give farmers a series of training and then they have those skills for life and can themselves even go out and train other farmers. So it really is a cost-effective investment for multiple reasons. And it's really important to note that the issue is absolutely urgent this season because of the war in Ukraine and the unaffordability of fertilizers. We are going to see crops being hit hard this season. I was speaking to farmers in Malawi only a few days ago, and they really see already the impact of the high prices of fertilizers. And they're very worried that there's going to be widespread hunger due to what I would call fertilizer cold turkey due to the soils not having any alternative source of fertility. And we're going to see massive crop failures because of this. And so there is an urgent need to scale up agroecological training to fight hunger, given the Ukraine crisis and, of course, the ongoing climate crisis, because, ladies and gentlemen, there is no time to waste. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Teresa Anderson. Next is Mr. Joseph Nzinga. You have the floor, please.
Yes. Good morning. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's dark here. We're used to the sunlight. My name is Joe, and I'll be doing a presentation with my colleague here, Irene. We are told to move to the podium.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Chair. Protocol observed. My name is Irene Liborius. I work with ESAF. I'm from Tanzania. ESAF was established 20 years ago. It's within 16 countries in Eastern and Southern Africa. It is a farmer-led organization initiated and owned by farmers. It has got 2.4 million members and headquarters in Morogoro, Tanzania. Well, our presentation today will be in two sections. The first section will be on agriculture on farmers' perspective. We're going to hear about the importance of agriculture on the farmers' side, but also SADC at glance and the commitment of Malabo. And also the second section will be on a very brief documentary. We're going to hear the farmers from different countries in SADC region on their side on the patterns of farmers, on the patterns of agroecology. But also we're going to have CSO's perspective on the part of agroecology. So my colleague Joe will continue with the presentation on the SADC glance. Then I'll take over on the part of the actions of farmers. Thank you.
Thank you, Irene, and congratulations again to the chair from Malawi and the vice chair from the United Republic of Tanzania. I'll start with the context first in terms of the SADC. I know we know everything on the region, and very quickly. We have 16 members. Now I can see we are extending, but also DRC, I think last week officially joined the East African community. The population is almost 350 million people, but also majority of them are relying on agriculture, 70%. So as the chair said, agriculture is very, very important. But also in terms of the GDP, 721 billion. And this by 2018. Almost half of the GDP, of course, belongs to the Republic of South Africa, with almost 300, and is the third in Africa, just following Egypt, Nigeria, and Egypt. In terms of agriculture, of course, it's making almost 20% of the SADC GDP, and you can see how agriculture is important. Total trade, we know we have the Committee on Investment and Trade. We are still at 376 million per year, and that's very low compared to the regions like Asia. SADC, I think, is around 18%. Asia is around 30%, and Europe is about 60%. So we can still use agriculture in terms of advancing our trade in the region. The funding is declining. According to the report in 2019-2020, going to 29, the funding in the agriculture sector is declining. And here the reports, the chair said that 47.7 million people are hungry or food insecure. But according to the report, official reports, by June last year, almost 51 million were food insecure. And again, looking at the COVID-19 and the war in Ukraine, hopefully the number might be increasing next year, unless otherwise you, honorable members, do something. Now, we have the commitment under the SADC within the United Nations, the SDG, especially 1 and 2 in terms of ending hunger and having poverty. But also we have the African arrangements within the Agenda 2063, and we have within it the CADU 2025 and the Malabo 7 commitments, which you are committed, and there are reports every year of how we are performing. And just briefly, I would like to show you how we performed in 2017. You can see the Greens, almost 8 members were on track, starting from Mauritius, Malawi, Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, South Africa, I think, yes, Seychelles, and by then it was Swaziland, Eswatini. All were on track. But the following 2 years, in 2019, the reports by the AU says no country was on track. They are all red. Of course, Mauritius was number one, is 5.98 points, followed by Zambia and Tanzania. So how did we perform this year? In fact, the report that came out this year show again that we are not on track. The cutoff was 7.28. And the next one will be in the next 2 years. So you can see how we performed. Tanzania came first, and then Eswatini came second. Then we had Zambia, Republic of Malawi, Republic of Zimbabwe, Botswana, all the way to Mauritius. I think there was a challenge in terms of reporting for Mauritius this time. It's a good performer, as you saw in 2017, was top in the region. So let's change gears now to the agroecology. Of course, our friends talked a lot on agroecology and the importance in terms of ending hunger in Africa. This is the first in terms of performance in terms of the hunger and malnutrition. And this is the FAO report. You can see the countries in the reddish, very high in terms of prevalence of stunting. And the stunting is very bad for the next generation because our kids are not growing properly. So the learning will be a challenge. So which kind of nation that we are preparing for the future? That is a big challenge. So we need to do something. We need to do something, and we need to do it now. And probably the only way out would be to have agroecology. Why we have stunting and malnutrition mostly, I think, is among of the reason maybe should be, is that we are using more only one crop that we are focusing on, particularly carbohydrate, and forgetting all the other types of the source of food. So why is agroecology important for smallholder farmers? I think number one is we are doing agroecology for years in our continent because the majority are smallholder farmers, maybe two countries in SADC region. One is Republic of South Africa and Botswana. But according to our reports, the South Africa also now is moving towards supporting smallholder farmers, particularly in Limpopo, where our members are. So agroecology was practiced before Green Revolution, and in particular is a technical set of practices which uses local skills and local input. And this is very, very important. Whatever is happening outside our region might not be affecting us too much if we would embrace agroecology. And of course, it's not expensive. It's not using seeds like hybrids, chemical fertilizers or pesticides, but also substituting ecological knowledge of the particular area in the local area. And of course, it's very important for the soil fertility because we know for sure that fertilizer kills microorganisms in the soils in the long run, but also is making hard pan in case of inadequate rainfall. And also using agroecology to control pests, and also reducing risk as far as climate change, as our friends talked about. But more importantly, is about diversification. So as I said, and it was said even before by Action Aid that agroecology is suited to help smallholder farmers coping with climate change and also avoiding risk, and most importantly, avoiding debt trap. We have vivid example in some countries where, like India, whereby farmers committed in hundreds suicide because of debts. So why agroecology matters? There are only 3 points that we can speak about as farmers. Number one is in terms of food sovereignty. It's enhancing ownership of land and seed for smallholder farmers. But also it's caring for the earth, as the presentation before talked about. And number three is providing health and nutritious food for people and animal. It's becoming very expensive. We are growing organic foods in Africa, but again, it's ferried to Europe. So why people are mostly moving towards and organic foods, this is because it's very nutritious. We don't know. Maybe in the future, we need to do some analysis as far as COVID-19 impact and see if there is a reason in terms of food utilization. Now, before moving on, let me invite Irene now to talk about what are the takeaways. What are we asking you to do moving forward at the regional level, but also in your countries? Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. So the takeaway actions by SADC-PF will be, the number one will be putting agroecology policy and plans at the heart of all public policy and budgets. We gave an example that we should emulate Zimbabwe, which has put in place a national agroecology policy. The second is to ensure realization of the SDGs 1, 2, as well as 3, 7, 13, and 14, but also the Malabo 7 goals. It means we should just domesticate them with the focus of agroecology. The third is the review of the national seed policies and the SADC plant breeders' right to accommodate farmer managed seed system. The fourth action should be ensure the region take precautionary approach to GMOs, LMOs with SADC risk dips. And the last, which is number five, is to ensure extension services, policies, training, research, and markets are based on agroecology by having the 10 principles by FAO. So from this juncture, we are going to have a very short, brief documentary that we are going to hear smallholder farmers from the SADC region, the importance of agroecology on their side, but also what does CSO say on the part of agroecology. Thank you.
The effects of climate change, land degradation, and the COVID-19 pandemic are hitting hard, especially African rural populations. Recent FAO statistics show that poverty, hunger, and malnutrition in Africa are growing again. 281.6 million Africans are undernourished. Agricultural policies in many African countries center around a Green Revolution productivity model without giving enough attention to small-scale farmers and the solutions that they have to offer. The recent COP26 event in Glasgow has committed to reduce deforestation and reduce emissions. Agriculture is key in the fight against climate change. Smallholder farmers believe and are continuing to fight for a truly sustainable agricultural system and agroecology. However, agroecological systems play a vital role in curbing climate change issues because they work with nature to protect biodiversity and the environment. There is a need to focus and provide real support for agroecology and agroforestry in order to scale them up and make the food and farming system truly sustainable.
ESAP views agroecology as a sustainable, holistic and cost-effective approach, harmony with ecosystems, and also prevails farmer culture, local conditions, and resilient to climate change. In ESAP, we say agroecology covers crops and livestock production, agroforestry, and it integrates landscapes and natural resources management, including water and biodiversity. It produces food, fiber, raw materials, and ecological services sustainably and good for human health.
On the 26th of November 2021, ESAF facilitated a virtual event, a dialogue on agroecology as a potentially transformative approach to equitable and climate-resilient agricultural development in Western, Eastern, Central, and Southern Africa. The webinar brought together a total of 293 participants from over 20 countries, which included smallholder farmers from across the continent, international funders, and civil society organizations. The webinar created a platform for participants to learn about small-scale farmer organizations and their inspiring work on the front lines of climate change, how agroecology guides their work, and what international donors and other civil society organizations can do to support farmers and agroecology as a way to achieve climate justice and resilience.
This webinar is part of a series that intends to offer learning opportunities on the meaningful work grassroots organizations are already doing around the world. We would like to open this space to listen directly to the field, learn together, and create opportunities for collective action.
Through this platform, smallholder farmers elaborated on the importance of agroecology in Africa and came out with resolutions which included the importance of having and putting in place the farmer-managed seed system, which enables farmers to preserve their indigenous seeds. This will ensure seed sovereignty, enhance participatory action research, training of actors, and sharing knowledge with different practitioners.
Convening our key objectives are really to firstly understand the experiences of small-scale farmers who've been dealing with a number of challenges from the climate crisis to the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, how can we support small-scale and smallholder farmers? The second objective is really to unpack how, by adopting a systemic approach such as agroecology, how can it facilitate our transition, the just transition within the region, and ensure that we are adopting transformative agriculture and food systems.
FAO defines agroecology as a holistic and integrated approach that simultaneously applies ecological and social concepts and principles to the design and management of sustainable agriculture and food systems. In 2018, FAO launched the Scaling Up Agroecology Initiative to accompany and support national agroecology transition processes through policy and technical capacity. The intent was to build a sustainable agriculture and food system. The 10 elements of agroecology include diversity. Diversification is key to agroecological transitions to ensure food security and nutrition while conserving, protecting, and enhancing natural resources. Co-creation and sharing of knowledge. Agricultural innovations respond better to local challenges when they are co-created through participatory processes. Synergies. Building synergies enhances key functions across food systems, supporting production and multiple ecosystem services. Efficiency. Innovative agroecological practices produce more using less external resources. Recycling. More recycling means agricultural production with low economic and environmental costs. Resilience. Enhanced resilience of people, communities, and ecosystems is key to sustainable food and agricultural systems. human and social values. Protecting and improving rural livelihoods, equity and social well-being is essential for sustainable food and agricultural systems. Culture and food traditions. By supporting healthy, diversified and culturally appropriate diets, agroecology contributes to food security and nutrition while maintaining the health of ecosystems. Responsible governance. Sustainable food and agriculture requires responsible and effective governance mechanisms at different scales, from local to national to global. And finally, circular and solidarity economy. Circular and solidarity economies that reconnect producers and consumers provide innovative solutions for living within our planetary boundaries while ensuring the social foundation for inclusive and sustainable development.
Agroecological farms, they generated higher economic values, they produced more, created more wealth and generated higher levels of income. At the same time, there are environmental benefits, mainly through increased soil health and biodiversity, and also social benefits such as better nutrition, women empowerment, and an active engagement of youth.
Agroecology can play a key role in achieving climate justice and the need of transitioning the food system to agroecology. It can play a major role in fighting climate change and fostering the achievement of the global goals.
We all know how vital it is on the need of transforming our agriculture and food system so they work while complementing the natural nature. It is important that we change the way we do agriculture to achieve the Malabo goal commitment to ending hunger in Africa by 2025 and the sustainable development goal of zero hunger by 2030.
With the increasing impact of climate change, it is inevitable to transition to agroecology because the agroecological farming systems protect the environment and the climate. Elizabeth Mpofu is a small-scale farmer from Zimbabwe.
We witnessed that this is the only way to produce good, healthy food, to take care of our soils, to take care of the Mother Earth. Our organic manure, to enrich ourselves, we are also practicing water conservation techniques because in most of our parts, especially here in Mashingo, which is Region 4, we receive very minimal rainfall, which is maybe 400 mils per year.
Ms. Mpofu said that small-scale farmers are also preserving indigenous seeds to ensure seed sovereignty as part of promoting agroecology in the country. She shared an example of the seed banks that are in their communities that promote seed diversity.
You can see in this room, I have a display of my local seeds, which I also use. I've also constructed a seed bank so that these seeds will not get lost again.
Ms. Mpofu called on donors and partners to invest in the transition to agroecology, especially on setting up the relevant infrastructures to support the transition to agroecology. Ms. Irene Nakijoba is a small-scale farmer from Uganda. She explains how she uses natural ways to grow food with many benefits like conservation of nature and the ecosystem.
Agroecology is a practice where we use natural methods of practicing of growing food and other products from soil. We use natural methods such as the organic manure, planting trees, ecosystem, digging trenches.
Agroecology is a cost-effective production of healthy food, hence healthy people. She further said that conventional agriculture is harmful because it kills nature and the soil. She shared an example of her animals dying out of consuming chemicals that were being sprayed on her neighbor's farm. Ms. Nakijoba called on the government and other stakeholders to support small-scale farmers through trainings and resources to transition.
Donors and governments should support small-scale farmers' organizations who are dealing with farmers at the grassroots to train them how to go about with this practice and the approach.
Climate scenarios for West Africa indicate that the climate variability currently experienced is likely to increase and intensify. Precipitation levels and patterns could change in coastal areas. Sea levels will rise with increasing temperatures, which will pose a threat to coastal regions and ecosystems. Mr. Musa discussed the challenges of agroecology.
Yes, thank you so much. So this is what we prepared from the part of smallholder farmers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Joe and Irene. In a special way, I saw the Secretary General, Ms. Boam Sekoma, walk in. Would like to say welcome, Madam Secretary General. And I would call upon Dr. Cliff Nlamin to make a presentation, please. Thank you.
I would like to recognize the chair of the session. Am I audible? I would like to recognize the chair of the session, honorable members of parliament in their cadres. We've got the senators, we've got the assembly. I would also want to recognize my fellow resource persons, all protocol observers, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Cliff Lamini. I come from the Kingdom of Eswatini, but I'm the executive director of CADESA. CADESA is the center for coordination of agriculture research and development in the SADC region. It was decided by member states to create this child, which is a child of SADC. It's the technical wing of SADC responsible for agriculture research and development. I have the privilege and the honor to stand before honorable MPs from different countries. I think my presentation, as much as I have a lot of slides, most of the issues have been covered. I think there are three slides which are relevant to this forum, where the honorable MPs will have to see how they can approach the transition or how they can advocate for a move from agroecology to from industrial agriculture to agroecology, which I think is going to be very tough for reasons that I may mention before I get to the presentation. But I'm asking MPs to praise themselves. So from the previous presentations, it is clear that agroecology is the traditional agriculture systems that Africans practiced before colonization. It's as simple as that. The old people that might have departed, they know the 13 principles of agroforestry without writing them or reading about them. They know about the 10 elements that FAO has crafted without reading or writing. So I want the MPs to appreciate that. It is an African innovation which Africans have always used, especially before the Green Revolution where fertilizer was introduced. So this is our own innovation. As MPs advocate for its reintegration to agriculture, we have to know that it is our own. We don't have to think that it is from other continents. I'm not trying to be a politician. I'm just trying to simplify the subject going forward. So my presentation is just to brush through agroecology, what is happening in South Africa, Malawi, Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho. Then where the honorable MPs have to think hard is, why is it now a bit difficult to transition from industrial agriculture, which came with the first Green Revolution? Now we've entered the second Green Revolution. So it has intensified. Now we're advocating for
a return to agroecology in the midst of industrial ecology. So that is the slide. Then there are some lock-ins now from the point of view of the political economy of food. There are some 8 lock-ins which will make it very difficult to transition. But with the support of our honorable MPs, we are going to try. Then the take-home points that our honorable MPs will think about. So that's why I'm saying we have CADESA programs that are related to agroecology, but we cannot say agroecology specifically because we have realized it has become a political economy issue. So we can't take a firm stand at the moment. That's why it has to come to members of parliament. They have to look at it and then give their blessing. So, I'm sorry. In South Africa, they also recognize that agroecology is an ancient practice. They also recognize that agroecology, the term is new, but the concept is ancient, which now talks about what I said earlier. It's our African innovation. Then there was when we have to transition from industrial agriculture to agroecology. Now, the way South Africa perceives it in other countries in the SADC region, now it has become a movement because we are going back to our roots. It's now, they're looking at it now, there are some progressive initiatives now looking at agroecology, looking at food sovereignty. Food sovereignty, in simple terms, it's when the people are in control of the products that they want to produce and the products that they want to eat. That is food sovereignty. They will say, we want indigenous vegetables, and they will have the opportunity to do that. That's food sovereignty. Then what is obtaining now, the neoliberal reformist, those difficult terms is not important. This is just industrial agriculture, as it is at the moment. Then South Africa has got a lot of players in agroecology now because it has become a serious movement. And the civil society is part of it. Here, there's a document that will list 9 case studies with success stories, actually telling the world that agroecology is as good as the other presenters have stated. So all these case studies are just promoting, justifying why there should be reintegration of agroecology in agriculture today. Then there is a lot of agroforestry research happening in Malawi. There are some certain requests. They were asking, are farmers interested in legume diversification, for instance? What are the social factors that influence legume diversification? Now, what transpired is that legume diversification had multiple impacts on the ecosystem and livelihoods. Then I assume that the honorable MPs will be given the opportunity to carry most of our presentations with them. So then when they are now in the comfort of their house, of their homes or their offices, they can then read further about this particular research that happened in the Republic of Malawi. Again, there's another project on participatory research on agroecology, climate change adaptation. They were asking the question, can participatory agroecology research be used to foster climate change? Participatory in the sense that every stakeholder, including the farmers, participate in agroecology research. By agroecology in this specific project, they talk about agroforestry, which is integrating trees in agriculture. But here they have fruit trees and leguminous trees, intercropping. Now I think honorable MPs will recall that intercropping has been done traditionally for many years. Intensive application menu, crawl menu was used. Planting different crops on the land is already familiar. Then honorable MPs can then read when they are comfortable about this project. There's another one in southern Malawi. It's also agroecology. A transition to improve. When there were transitions at local level, there were very clear improvements in food, in terms of food security, income and land use changes, which were also ecosystem friendly. There's another document which may be consulted. This another one in Malawi, where farmers led the development of a curriculum on agroecology, climate change and nutrition, as well as social equity. The farmers were leading. So I think the message we are trying to send to our honorable MPs is that the farmers should be at the center of this. Not even the research officers, but the research officers will have to work hand in hand with the farmers, because the farmers, when it comes to agroecology, they know more than the scientists. This is another one. Maybe I'll just run through, because there are so many from Malawi. This one again. Malawi makes the research available in terms of publications and to the public. That's why there's a lot about Malawi. Then there's also, in Malawi, there's also another understanding that agroforest is also a form of agroecology, and there's a project. There was a project in Tanzania now. They called it the Singida Nutrition and Agroecology Project. What was observed today is that intervention households significantly improved in terms of food security, dietary diversification, because they're planting many crops. They shifted away from monocropping. There's a document as well there. Most of the documents, you click the button, you get them online. There was another one where they were breaking away from industrial food to farming systems in Tanzania again. There are marked improvements that you observed for the smallholder in the household. There's another, conservation agriculture is also understood to be a form of agroecology. There's a project in Tanzania. And the other interesting one is growing organic pineapples, where they do not use chemical fertilizers or ethyl, because ethyl is the chemical that is used for banana, oranges, and pineapple. When you want them to ripen at the same time to save costs, they never use that. In Zambia, there is the Zambian Alliance for Agroecology and Biodiversity Conservation. It's advocating and promoting agroecology. It's very intentional about that. There is also a lot of research in Zimbabwe. Farmers are practicing agroecology to overcome the adversities of climate change. Imagine the Africans at the time when they were practicing agroecology. Climate change was not even as worse as it is now. It means they had a foresight. So we have to respect those people. But now we're running up and down trying to advocate for this, which they did very long time ago. Then in Zimbabwe again, there's the Shashe Farms, which is also agroecology and water harvesting, which is followed by agroecology and water harvesting. These are case studies that can be data cook level. In Zimbabwe again, there's mulch and seed banks, conservation and farming, which is part of agroecology. In Mozambique, there are a couple of agroecology projects as well. There's one which started in 2014. There's another one in 2012. These were heavily funded by funding partners, and communities were participating. In Lesotho, there is the famous Makobane farming system, which is agroforestry by nature. And Makobane is another doctor, is a doctor of philosophy expert, who was born and bred in Lesotho. So he was researching, and then his research gave birth to the Makobane farming system, which is the most, is a signature agroecology program in Lesotho. Then here is where I need the attention of the honorable MPs, because now this is political economy, where they now will feel comfortable. But can I please be forgiven for lock-in number 5. I'll explain what it means, because I'll sound like a rebel without a cause. Now this is now looking of industrial food systems as at 2021. Number one, there is a lot of investment that has been done in industrial agriculture, including for the smallholder. So if you want them to leave that and go to agroecology, so that is where now we have to think, how do we convince them? Now, most of the agriculture that is happening is based on export. So if you want to change that, you have to understand how you change that, because now it's export dependent. Then there's the issue of cheap food. Most of the cheap food is produced through mass production, which mass production is mainly promoted by industrial agriculture. Then there is what they call a highly compartmentalized structures, which continue to govern the setting of priorities in politics and so on. So there are people in our places that are sitting just to support industrial agriculture. So to dismantle that, we need some effort. The short term, this point is very crucial, if it is well put. Short-term thinking. For the members of parliament to effectively do their work on policy matters, they might need more than 5 years term of office. Because if 5 year term of office is not sufficient, when you try to advocate for ecology, it's a natural system. So you can't expect any results from the MPs within 5 years. It's a serious point, which is also supported by the University of Sussex in the UK, which is leading in political economy of food. So they are trying to see what can happen to the term of office of MPs, because they may not be effective, especially in the fight to transition from from industrial to agroecology. So you need more time. Then the field the wealth narrative, this one, it came more particularly after the second Green Revolution, because the first Green Revolution was coming with fertilizers, chemicals, and so on. But the feed the world now, now the attention is, there are so many people in the world, the population is rising. How do we meet the demand for food? Let's expand and extend industrial agriculture. So that is another issue that we have to keep at the back of our minds as honorable MPs when advocating for the transition. Then, the measure of success, if you look at most of the regional agriculture policies, even the national ones, they emphasize on production and productivity. They never talk about the value of agriculture in ecosystem services or environmental protection. They don't. So now when you come with what is presented for agroecology, mainly ecosystem services, protection of the environment and so on, but politically now, what counts is feeding the mouths that are out there, the many people, the multitude. So it's just another issue that has to be at the back of our minds. Then the concentration of power. The way food systems are currently structured allows value to accrue and mainly to a certain group of people. This is related to the other point. There are certain people that are responsible and they are powerful behind food systems. Food systems, including what has to be grown from production to utilization. So now, agroecology basically wants to take some power back to the people, to the farmers, for them to be comfortable with the agroecology, which I normally call it community-led innovation. It's grassroots community innovation. Under innovation, communities were excluded until recently, where this issue of community and grassroots-led innovation now is captured. So I would request our honorable MPs to actually underline that this community-led innovation should be given the respect it deserves, even by the finding partners who are now trying to now put money on agroecology. So this is the other slide where I request the honorable MPs to just appreciate. How can the lock-ins be dismantled? There are 7 recommendations that could be looked at. develop new indicators for sustainable food systems that will not look only at production and productivity, but will also consider the value of agriculture in ecosystems, because ecosystems support agriculture and not the other way around. So if you destroy ecosystems, agriculture will collapse in the long term. Shift from public support towards diversified agricultural production systems. Agroecology is diversified, but now industrial, you just grow one crop in that portion of land and you focus on it. Chemicals, you get a good deal, but you will find that you have damage there. Let me give an example. Where there has been pineapple grown for many years, or there has been sugar cane grown for many years, to reverse that to a natural ecosystem, to practice agroecology, is very expensive. To restore an ecosystem which is damaged is very expensive. So use public procurement support to support diverse local agricultural produce. These are the points that our MPs can carry. Strengthen movements that unify diverse constituencies around agroecology. As I've said, agroecology was reintroduced, yet it was there anyway, with a lot of science now, principles, elements, what. Strengthen the movement, the support from the members of parliament to say to the people, this should not be political movements. This should be just social networks to promote agroecology's introduction to the mainstream. What's now, what, the moment you say movement, some people will run away. We know that. So the sixth one, mainstream diversification, diversification. That's now making sure that in a piece of land you grow maize, maize, pumpkins. When you grow up, some of the products, they were still there. Legumes, beans, whatever. You just mix. So my honorable MPs will now look at this and say, I think some of the MPs present here today, they can now identify with some of these practices that were done under agroecology. Then the last is develop joint up food policies at multiple levels. That's where now, besides anything, 5 years is not enough for to carry out these five recommendations. It's not enough. I don't know whether the 5 years came from heaven, but I like our MPs to look at this issue and not wait for 5 years to be extended overseas in Europe before Africa can extend. We have got an opportunity that to transition and integrate agroecology to mainstream, we need more than 5 years in office. That's why I said, I'm not saying it's from me, but it's a reality. You know, it's just a reality. So now, take home points. Our honorable MPs will say agroecology, you look at it as a part to food and nutrition security for agriculture transition in Africa. It's very unfortunate that now it's transition, yet this thing was here.
It was 15 years.
10. For starters, agroecology and the use of natural resources in the context of climate change. Agroecology, so as a social, you know, it's unfortunate that sometimes the crafting of the, when a scientist comes with a doctorate or a master's to stand here to present, sometimes they want to forget that this is from the African people, the old people. It's not from us. We have to learn from them more than them learning from us. Because the moment you pause as if you know more than them, they won't cooperate. Then public policies, including legal and institutional frameworks to promote agroecology. Here, number four is also promoting the extension from 5 years. Because you can't deal with number four within 5 years. Now, in terms of CADESA, this is the last slide, Chair. CADESA is agroecology related programs. We have got the APSA program. If you go to the website, you'll see the APSA program has been done in Malawi, Mozambique, Zambia. Now it's in Angola and the Lesotho. All these countries have got specific commodities. Then it's going to other countries as well. Then there's the CADAP XP4 program. There is the Accra program, which ended, but has a lot of learning lessons learned in the region. Then there is the IECRES, a new project. Then there's this GT3A plus, which incorporated COVID-19. Then we've got a new one, which is just, it's just started, the climate resilience in natural resource management. It's funded by GIZ. The APSA is funded by the World Bank. CADAP is the EU. The ACRA was GIZ. The other ones, I think it's EU and others. On that note, I think my presentation ends, Chair. Thank you for attention, Honorable MPs.
Thank you very much, Doc. Honorable members, we are now going to go into plenary for the three presentations. So if you have got a question for clarification or a comment, you may raise up your hand and you introduce yourself by name and the country that you are coming from, because we don't have the country tags. The floor is open, honorable members. I've got my sister here from the Kingdom of Lesotho.
My name is Honorable Tepang Tsita Mosena from the Kingdom of Lesotho, as stated. I wish to commend the three presenters on very insightful presentations. For some of us who are not very much into, who are not practicing agriculture directly, this is a very important learning curve. And I was actually worried at the beginning because I felt the terminology was just not being expanded enough into, and I wasn't exactly getting what is it that we are, a take home for us. But as the presentations came in, all the pieces started getting together. Now, the specific questions that I have is, I want to have a feel of the reception of the, let me just globally just put it as stakeholders. The last presentation clearly articulated that we are trying to promote indigenous skill. We're trying to infuse that indigenous knowledge for economic benefit and many others. But I would like to think that maybe the reception is not by everybody, is not positively received by different players. We have different international organizations. We have different donor organizations. We have different counterparts in different regions. Are they in support of this dynamic transformation that our agro industry is trying to move into? Just to get a general feel. That's the first one. The second one, having studied, maybe it will go to the third presenter, having presented the different case studies of the different countries, do we see any drastic difference in terms of the indigenous knowledge or application of the indigenous knowledge insofar as agroecology is concerned? I just want to determine if we can say Lesotho, for example, has certain or some kind of knowledge that is more aligned towards a certain way, more than more than Namibia. I'm just giving an example. Or do we see the agroecology as a uniform structure within the region? That's the second question. And the third one, I didn't quite understand how on the lock-in areas, he presented eight of them, and he said there's one, I think it was lock-in eight, in fact, that says it decentralizes power. I didn't quite get how he was articulating on that point, and if possible, can he go over it again? And last but not least, do we have any strong players in the region insofar as the agroecology is concerned? I'm just trying to assess if there are member states that we can look up to as the big brother or the big sister insofar as agroecology implementation. Thank you.
My colleague, the honourable member from Zambia.
Thank you so much. Mine, I just want to get a clarification so that maybe I can be enlightened. From the presentation that has been made, I am meant to understand that with agroecology, we more or less like use the old system of agriculture, the way it used to be done in the past, and he said pre-colonial days. So I wanted to understand, if we are to engage in agroecology and support it, that we start, that's the one that we start using, wouldn't it threaten the productivity in terms of yields? Won't it reduce the amount of food that is going to be produced? That's what I want to find out.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I see Honourable Member there. Please introduce yourself and your country.
Muito obrigado. Muito obrigado, excelências. Meu nome é Carlos Moreira Vasco, Moçambique. Portanto, gostaria de participar neste debate, destas palestras, destas comunicações que acabamos de ouvir. Em primeiro lugar, também gostaria de saudar as apresentações que foram feitas, em que tiramos algumas ilações sobre o clima e, portanto, as condições agroecológicas. A questão que eu queria colocar como preocupação, nós em Moçambique temos enfrentado uma certa influência negativa na área da agricultura, que consiste de facto nas queimadas descontroladas. Portanto, as apresentações que foram feitas, não ouvi nenhum momento a falar-se sobre a necessidade de nós lidarmos com este processo que tem influenciado negativamente, tanto na agroecologia, no processo de agricultura. Tanto neste processo de mudanças climáticas, nós, em Moçambique, temos sido influenciados com a situação de desflorestamento das matas, isto é, a destruição das florestas através da ação do homem, que ocorre geralmente para a exploração da madeira, na abertura de áreas para a agricultura e a pastagem para o gado. Portanto, eu queria acentuar a minha intervenção neste aspecto relacionado com as queimadas descontroladas, que têm sido a causa para o desflorestamento das matas que nós temos, o que prejudica muito a agricultura no global e no familiar, tanto nas famílias que praticam a agricultura em particular. Qual é a resposta que nós devemos dar em relação a esta situação? Muito obrigado.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we're going to start with the first set of three. And I think my honourable member from the Kingdom of Lesotho, most of our questions were going to the third presenter. So the questions from my colleague, honourable member from Zambia. So I would like to ask Doc to chip in. And also the other two presenters, where they feel they can come in, I think they can always also chip in and come in after you. And as well as you're also going to start responding to the question from our honorable member from Mozambique. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable MPs. I thank the honorable member from the Kingdom of Lesotho. I would like to respond as follows. The issue of acceptance of agroecology or the transition from agroecology to from industrial agriculture to agroecology, my response would be the leading corporations that are producing chemical fertilizers and insecticides and so on, they may not be entirely impressed by the transition. I don't want to commit myself or cut this out that one. But you can imagine that industrial agriculture is business. And it has been business for many, many decades. So to transition, it means there's loss of profit there. But still, if you look at Agenda 2030, where sustainable development is also centered around the social, environmental, and economic, you find that in the quest for environmental protection on sustainable use of natural resources, then agroecology may take precedence over industrial. That is on paper. But practically, we are going to see how our honorable MPs working with the respective regional agriculture organizations will try to advocate for the transition. But the business sector, corporations, I'm not sure how they take it. So in terms of the different application of agroecology practices across the SADC region, I would say, as presented by presenter number one and two, they are basically the same principle because it's just natural. But they vary from region to region within a country and then between countries. So it depends on the climate and the soils as well, what kind of practices are preferred. Then when it comes to lock-in number eight, I might not have presented it well, but the honorable member has assisted me to give me an opportunity to present my case again. And I look in number eight. What I was supposed to say, because I have to simplify it very well, not all agriculture stakeholders at the moment have control of the food systems, especially the grassroots. Because when you talk of control of food systems, it's control from production to consumption. So because industrial agriculture is the most prevalent, so an industrial agriculture is business. So it means the business sector has more control over the grassroots. Grassroots meaning the smallholders and the households. So I think that is where I end my response. Thank you, Chairperson.
Any of the other presenters who would like to chip in? Mr. Joseph Nzinga, would you like to come in?
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. I think from the look of the farmers, in terms of the strong pair, as Irene presented, that we need to emulate in the region, is first to recognize that at the regional level, the word terminology agroecology is rare vocabulary is not there. Read through the RIPE, the Regional Agriculture Investment Plan, read through the Regional Agriculture Policy, who one of the brain behind is here, the doctor to be Mr. Muchero. I think the vocabulary is very new. If we talk about agroecology, even within the fund, the Food and Agriculture and Natural Resources Directorate is a new thing. So that is a challenge number one. But a challenge number two at the regional level is also in terms of the regional agriculture investment plan. We see no mention, but there is a window of opportunity where there is a commitment now to put in place an extension service, which can be an entry point toward making agroecology an acceptable practice throughout the region. Now, at the national level, Zimbabwe is the best example. It's the best example because of the recognition from the policy itself, that the policy is anchored through the agroecology. But now, next week, they will be discussing a draft of the national agroecology policy. So that is something that we can be proud of, and I think is a natural, because agriculture is becoming expensive. Farmers are not very happy with agriculture now, to say the least, because it's becoming very, very expensive. Buying seed, buying fertilizers, buying pesticides is very, very expensive. So it's a natural thing that we have to move to moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Joseph. Maybe Ms. Teresa Anderson, you would like to come in? If you have got any comment, if you do want to chip in.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the honourable members for the very good questions. In response to the member from Zambia, the question about agroecology, would the...
Sorry, Teresa, just hold on. I think I've got a problem with the hearing. Okay.
Yes, is that better?
Yes, this is better. I think you can start all over again, please.
Thank you. To the member from Zambia, in response to the question about whether applying this traditional system that the previous speaker alluded to, whether that would negatively affect food security because it is, you know, theoretically old and traditional. Well, actually, it's wonderful that the previous speaker highlighted that agroecology has come from the African continent, but it is not only an old system that is millennia new. In fact, it is an integration of traditional knowledge and science. And modern science can really give us insights that can help to improve practices, and is already doing so as agroecological techniques are being shared and upscaled. However, it really is massively, massively under-researched compared to the billions that have been invested in industrial agriculture. And so much more science and research can be done into, you know, diversification of crops, identifying local varieties that are suited to various topographies and climate, that can identify and help us understand, you know, the complexities of soil biota and how they engage in different ways, and strategies that farmers can use to really feed soils. There is so much that science can really do to improve and expand the knowledge base of agroecology. I think that it will be a massive growth area in science in the decades to come. And it's very exciting to think about what agroecological science could help us to advance towards in the future. I'm optimistic about its potential. And really, when it comes to the questions of yields, you know, the fact that agroecological systems have been very much advanced by civil society, by regional farmers networks, means that already farmers are many steps ahead of where their ancestors were in terms of the access to the diverse seed networks and knowledge and strategies that they perhaps had only had one line of knowledge to learn from, but now they have multiple strategies to learn from and apply in various different ways. So perhaps this speaks a little bit to one of the questions from the member from Lesotho. Your question was about whether each country or each region just does one specific type of agriculture or whether it's one homogeneous type of agriculture. Agroecology is really about a set of principles, as, you know, the 10 elements that were outlined by the speaker from ESAF, the 13 principles that I spoke about. These are very interconnected, and these are principles, but not like rigorous requirements or, you know, strict laws. They may be applied differently from farm to farm, country to country. So we could be talking about different seed varieties. You know, farmers in Germany will obviously be using different crops from farmers in Lesotho. The topography will be different. The strategies to manage water will be very different. The soil varieties will be very different. The climate is very different. The pest types will be very different. So, but what is common is that farmers are using local materials instead of chemical fertilizers to enrich the soil. So some farmers may choose to do composting. There are many different ways to do composting. There are ways to do vermiculture, which is using, you know, worms to make particularly rich types of compost and nutrient applications to the soil. Or then maybe, you know, some farmers take manure directly from their animals, depending on what kind of animals you have. Legumes, as the previous speaker alluded to, planting crops that themselves take nitrogen from the soil and put that into taking nitrogen from the air and putting that into soluble form in the soil is an excellent way to enrich soils. And actually these techniques, these natural techniques, which may vary hugely to increase soil fertility, these provide much greater benefits than the chemical fertilizers, because chemical fertilizers have only three macronutrients in them: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And actually plants require a whole diversity of nutrients and micronutrients that actually you get when you take all of the plant material, etc., from other sources. You feed the micronutrients back into the soil and a diversity of soil. And that means your plants themselves are going to be naturally healthier. Whereas the industrial agriculture plants really only end up having a very minimal amount of nutrients in them and therefore are much more vulnerable to pests and disease as a result. So that's a very key point to remember as well. So to the question of supportive and unsupportive actors, it was great to hear the speaker from SF talk about Zimbabwe. Indeed, their agroecology policy that they're just about to introduce has come in the context of Zimbabwean government having a lack of hard currency with which to purchase fertilizers. And we know that this is a situation that pretty much all African countries are going to face now with the rising price of fertilizer due to the war in Ukraine, which is affecting access to food and fuel and fertilizers. So the lessons from Zimbabwe are really important to look at right now, in fact, and to understand that Zimbabwe has had to become more self-sufficient because it doesn't have access to fertilizers and therefore needs to find alternative strategies like agroecology to ensure soil fertility. This is being very, very timely, as I mentioned earlier, due to the war in Ukraine. Other actors that are relevant could be Tanzania, also includes agroecology advice and its extension services. I'm aware of Gambia, at least I know the Gambian Extension Services also advise low-income farmers to use agroecology as an adaptation strategy. And I think possibly Rwanda, and maybe there are several others too, apologies that I don't have that comprehensive list to hand. And you may be interested to know that in addition to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change really clearly recommending the shift to agroecology, the EU as a donor is taking this very seriously. So the European Union is not only shifting its own internal agriculture policy, for example, the farm to fork strategy, to take account of the importance of agroecology both for mitigation and adaptation benefits, but its international support is also increasingly encouraging and welcoming agroecological practices. So this is something that countries may want to be aware of and orient towards. Oh, and apologies to the member of Mozambique. Thank you for drawing attention to the point of burning. Well, now, while I didn't hear the question very clearly, unfortunately, I would say that it is the materials that farmers are burning, if it's crop residues that are being burnt in the fields, which have harmful effects, that is that strategy should indeed be replaced for climate reasons. I understand sometimes farmers do that burning of crops because they want to return the nutrients to the soil. Now, there are better ways to do that that are less harmful and less risky, that cause fewer bushfires or forest fires and harm. For example, instead of burning those crops, turn those crops into composting materials. And that is a way that you can return the nutrients to the soil using agroecological techniques that totally avoids the risks of forest fires that that you alluded to, if I understood correctly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I saw a hand from the Honourable Member from Eswatini and from Zimbabwe. And then Namibia in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. And thanks to the presenters for their insightful presentations. I have just maybe two questions. The first one is just for my comfort, anxiety, and or interest. The presenter, whose presentation, by the way, was very eloquent, articulate, did not cover all the countries, the conditions, or shall I say, what the situation is like. Is it because there was nothing to write home about, or what? Because I'm thinking, if there is nothing to write home about, it doesn't necessarily mean everything is in order there. We need to share. That's why we need to share and make sure that they also follow suit if there are problems. So, for instance, if I were to talk for Eswatini, I know there are climate smart agricultural technologies. To what extent are they agroecology friendly? So that's the kind of information I may be interested in. Secondly, I'm not into agriculture, but I think I have it as my general knowledge, I might be wrong, that the focus in this day and age is to move away from the old way of doing agriculture solely for food sufficiency and maybe nutrition, but transform that into a commercial enterprise. Now, how does this compare with agro ecology situation? How do you balance the equation? I know it's always the anxiety, but I think it has been answered, but maybe for further clarification, because the question is, yes, we want to reinvent the wheel. I don't know how possible that is. And there was a reason why we moved there. Maybe it was for the purpose of economies of scale, so to speak. Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we go to Zimbabwe.
Thank you, moderator. And I would also like to thank the presenters. I appreciate the praise received on Zimbabwe, on Zimbabwe's adoption of agroecology. But let me quickly say, you found that agroecology really assists in many ways. And if you adopt it, you find that you can grow crops, or you can avoid use of pesticides in the fields. And if you grow local crops that go well with the soils and the little rains that are obtained in the areas, you'll find that at the end of the day, you can manage to get food on the table. The other presenter talked about people of Zimbabwe not using fertilizers just because they don't have fertilizers. They don't have fertilizers. It is not the way how we are taking it as Zimbabwe. If I can give you an example of maybe growing homegrown varieties such as sorghums in the dry areas, the sorghums naturally do not need fertilizers. You just buy your seed and you just start growing them. They will do well with the soils that we have in Zimbabwe, and there is no need for you to apply fertilizer. It's not because there is no money to buy the fertilizers. And also, if you look at the pest control, you find that we have got migratory birds. Those migratory birds, if I don't know where they come from, but they come from foreign countries. They will come and eat the pests without and leave your field clean. So there will be no use for you to go and buy pesticides to maybe to spray the pests in the fields. So those are the ways that we are using. But I also have got a question of climate change, because you find that even though we are doing all those things, my question is that does agroecology minimize climate change to take place in the area? Because when we talk about agroecology, we are just thinking of the old ways that we used to use, like applying, let's say we want fertilizers in the gardens or in the field. We just take manure from the fields and from the crops and go and pour and then start adding water there, and they will grow so well without much ado, without need for fertilizers. I think I so submit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. And now we'll go to Namibia.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think I have 2 points to make. The first is probably linked to what the Honorable Member from Eswatini has asked. And that is, so much money has been spent on industrializing agriculture. Today, we are talking about getting back to the roots. Given the time that has lapsed and the research that has gone into industrializing agriculture to make agriculture a real commercial venture, how much does SADC need to put into the actual operation, and how much do we need to put in the research? Because we all have different climatic conditions. The country where I'm from is a very semi-arid country, Namibia. I have a number of friends doing agriculture in Zimbabwe. They have a complete different sort of ecology. What does SADC need to put in? This is the question from the presenters. And here I'm talking about the ratio of budgeting to GDP in terms of trying to bring this up. Have they done a study like that? Is it for the whole region? Is it per country? Or if they haven't, maybe it is high time that it is done. The reason why I'm saying that is because I myself, agriculture is my passion. Might not look like it, but it is my passion. I'm actually a farmer in Namibia. I produce crops. I produce beef and lamb. The problem that we have is, and especially if we are now talking about getting back to, say, for instance, making your own fertilizers. For young people like myself and even younger, agriculture is unattractive. One. Two, agriculture can never, ever go on to being a profitable venture without subsidy. It can't. You know, I say I'm a farmer. I subsidize my farming out of my own pocket. You are competing with someone from Germany who gets 100% subsidization from the government. So young people don't find it funny to have to spend their salaries on agriculture, stepping in cow dung and things like that. What is it that we need to do? I suppose maybe someone has covered it, maybe I missed it, at policy level. And I respectfully have to, don't know whether to say to disagree, but maybe have a different view, that if sufficient political will is harnessed, together with the energy of the young, I don't think we need 5 years for a single person to be in office for us to have transformation. It is a matter of realizing the value of agriculture to our countries, and two, wanting everyone in the country to succeed, putting these measures in place. And once we have harnessed that political will, I believe any other politician that comes into office is able to implement that in the same fashion that we implement the education system policies, in the same fashion that we implement the health system policies, and so forth. I think sufficient education must just be done in our population, our politicians, as to the importance of agriculture, but not only agriculture, but sustainable agriculture. So in a nutshell, two questions. What should we put in terms of our GDP ratio in terms of research and operation? And two, how do we ensure that young people are actually encouraged into taking on these hardships?
Thank you very much, Honorable Person. Then we're going to go to our presenters to respond to these questions, and then we can close the first session so that we go to the second session. So we can go in the same order as previously. We start with the doctor and then we go to Mr. Nzinga. And then we're going to go to Ms. Anderson in that order, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for the questions. Starting with the honorable member from Eswatini, where I also come from, not all countries were reflected in my presentation simply because of the reason that member states did not respond when I wanted information. I know that Eswatini hosted a very big dialogue on agroecology last year, but I couldn't just write something except communicating facts from them. So I didn't want to misappropriate the facts. I went to the extent of even engaging the organizers of the agroecology a dialogue, and they promised to send me information. Until today, they've not sent. And it's very difficult to remind the member state that we need information. It's critical. You can't do that unless you want to get something which you didn't apply for. So in terms of why agroecology in the modern times, when it was supposed to be modernized and moving with the times of the Green Revolution and industrialization and transformed livelihoods, the simple reason, now I'm going to talk from a scientific point of view. The climate change adaptation is a driving force in this context. Because if you can search now the top 12 environmental problems of 2022, agriculture is rated as number 10. It's a top environmental problem. So, and it comes from industrial agriculture and not from agroecology. I think that is the point of contention. Despite the profits that comes with industrial agriculture, the cost of environmental damage is very big. It's in proportions which are unimaginable. Then the other issue now, again on the investment, the massive investment that has been done on industrial agriculture, and people are made to believe, especially in our generation, that is the way to go. But that is what has led us to where we are, this climate change catastrophes. Because when industrial agriculture was introduced, that is when the capitalists or the business people, they treated land as a mechanical body to manufacture food. Whilst the agroecology people treated land as an ecosystem. So if you treat land as a mechanical body, you will degrade the ecosystems. When you degrade the ecosystems, you then lose the ecosystem functions. When you lose the ecosystem functions, the planet is under siege now. And it's some of the environmental damage that has been caused by industrial agriculture are irreparable. So you look at the money back this side, look at where the planet is going, then it's very painful. And to even know what is happening now, it stresses me, because the money has literally transformed the ecosystems. And I think I would beg our honorable MPs to look at it that way, that yes, we are transforming livelihoods through the money that you get from industrial agriculture, but the irreversible and irreparable damage to the environment and the ecosystems will cost us the planet itself. In 1975, the planet reached its all-time full capacity, carrying capacity. Now we have exceeded the carrying capacity. If we continue in this industrial agriculture trajectory, it means the planet will end. I submit, Chair.
Thank you very much, Doc. Mr. Nzinga, you can come in if you've got something to add.
Yes, probably on the financing in agriculture. Generally, we're not doing well. The report that came out from the AU this year is showing that no country in SADC is putting 10% as it was agreed. Malawi was trying very much to put more money in the agriculture sector, but majority was on the FISIP. The FISIP is the farm input support system, whereby farmers get fertilizer and seed. But if you look at the growth of the agriculture sector in Malawi, it was not really corresponding to what the government was putting into. So we still have a challenge in terms of investing to the agriculture sector in the countries. But also we are doing a little bit better in research in some of the countries. I don't have a list now here, but I think I'll get it later as to who is investing more on the research. I think countries like Zambia, they're doing quite well. Seychelles, Mauritius, but also Botswana and Namibia, they're doing well in terms of investment. That is 1% of the GDP into research. But again, that is just like a blanket to every research. How much is it is going to agriculture? I think is minimal. It was quite neglected. Maybe a doctor from CADESA could approve of that. But now countries are moving towards saying, let we fund this. But the question is, which kind of research that is being funded? And is that research being used by farmers on the ground? That is even a $1 million question. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Anderson, if you've got a comment, you can come in, please.
Thank you very much. Firstly, to the Honourable Member of Zimbabwe, thank you for those excellent stories, which really prove the power of agroecology on its own terms, that farmers are choosing to use agroecology precisely because it works so well to improve yields. In addition to the yields, it provides multiple climate adaptation benefits in the context of climate change, as you outlined. And it creates the system of fertilizer inputs. So I did highlight that point about the independence from fertilizer, particularly in light of the relevance of fertilizer prices rising due to the war in Ukraine. I think honorable members should note that Ukraine and are the world's top producers of fertilizers. Russia has now, due to, you know, restrictions and embargoes, is not able to export them anymore. And Ukraine has also declared that they are going to retain their own, and there is very little export going on. So that is why prices are rising. Our research, we're doing initial research, which will soon be published. But to give you an advanced indication from different countries, prices are rising between 50 and about 225% in some cases of fertilizers after just 2 months of this war. But this war is going to carry on for several months, we can anticipate, and this situation is going to get much, much worse. So climate change aside, this issue is urgent because you will not be able to find fertilizers anywhere soon, and you need a plan for that. That is my real urging, frank urging to you with that in mind. On the other point, agroecology is indeed commercially viable. It's viable on its own terms. It's viable to feed the world. I would say that actually there is land available to feed the world agroecologically. We just need to repurpose some of the land that is currently being used to grow animal feed for industrial agriculture farming practices in certain parts of the world. And then we can actually create market businesses, create, you know, feed everybody, create profit using agroecology and without being required to need fertilizers and the seeds that are dependent on them. One of the points about, you know, wanting to make a living on the land, agroecology does allow you to make a living on the land, and in fact it stops you from driving people off the land. Let's bear in mind that in the US the industrial agriculture model means that, you know, you may need 1,000 hectares of land owned by one family. That means that you need 1,000 hectares to feed one family. That is not at all efficient. I don't know why people say that industrial agriculture is efficient, because it requires a lot of land to feed Whereas agroecology, you can feed a family, you know, and give them incomes with just a few hectares of land. And so it is actually more efficient and it provides jobs for people, whereas industrial agriculture is pushing people off the land and forcing rural urban migration. Secondly, you cannot, you know, the talk about, you know, efficiency and productivity and of industrial agriculture ignores the climate reality because modern industrial agribusiness developed seeds to respond to high amounts of fertilizers and high amounts of water. They're like Goldilocks. If they get too little water and fertilizer, they do not respond too well. If they get too much, they also don't respond too well. They need to get the perfect amount. But as with climate change, these perfect Goldilocks conditions of water and fertilizer do not exist anymore. In fact, farmers are getting perfect conditions only maybe 1 year in three or sometimes less, depending on the region. And that is why agroecology is all the more urgent nowadays. And that is why the farmers that we work with, once they try these practices, take them up wholeheartedly and tell their friends about them because they know it works. Agroecology makes farming much more attractive. And when it comes to young people, many of them would indeed like to farm and stay on the land. This is what we hear from communities across Africa, that they would actually like to do farming, but they see very little opportunity now with climate change affecting their income, that of course they don't feel motivated to stay in such a risky business. But they should have the option, and agroecology helps with this. And lastly, to the point of subsidies, you say that agriculture cannot survive without subsidies. Well, we could agree partially on that, but we might agree that subsidies should be subsidizing the right things and not the wrong things. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, our resource persons, for the good presentation and elaborate answers that we had asked. And this marks the end of the first session. Honorable members, I just wanted to find out from you if we should take a break for 10 minutes and then we come back for the second session. I know we're not doing quite well on the time because we had started late, but then we can also agree once we are back to see how best we can go about. I think we can just give 10 minutes each to the next presenters, and then we can have 10 minutes of preliminary, and then we're done. So we can take a 10 minutes break, and then we should be back here at around 5:05. Thank you, honorable members. looking at the time. Honourable members, distinguished participants, we shall now listen to the presentations from the last two resource persons, namely Mr. Martin Muchelo, that one is going to be physically, and Dr. Louis Hove, who presented virtually. They are allocated 15 minutes each to each presenter, but I'm sure they can squeeze it to 10 minutes. I submit. Thank you, honourable members. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of Parliament, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Martin Muchero. I apologise on my slide, I even misspelled my name. That's not a very good start. But I'm Martin Muchero. I'm from Zimbabwe, but I've been involved with the SADC Secretariat for approximately 11 years in the Food, Agriculture and Natural Resources Directorate. I was, up until December 2018, responsible for the coordination and the crafting of the SADC Regional Agricultural Policy. So if there is a figure or anyone that you need to point at for any wrongs that have been done with the Regional Agricultural Policy, or RAP as we call it, you're looking at the person. But it was a great pleasure to be able to participate in a process that resulted in the development of the Regional Agriculture Policy. And maybe this will come a bit clearer as we progress in the presentation that I'm going to make just now. My presentation is based on the need to support governments, to support parliaments, in the analysis of particularly our budgets, but also the theory or the practice moving towards and transitioning from traditional agriculture to agroecology. So with the support of ActionAid, with a colleague, Stephen Greenberg, we were contracted to develop a framework or an instrument or a tool that will be used to analyze budgets, to analyze programs, to analyze projects, in as far as how they support agroecology. And so, what we have done is to come up with this framework, and the framework has been applied, and I'm here to present the results of the analysis using this framework. It's been applied now at the SADC regional level. We have also applied it in the case of Zimbabwe, and we have so far applied it in the case of Malawi. So the work is continuing, and we still have a number of other countries that are supported by ActionAid, in which we're going to use the tool to analyze financing for agroecology. And so what I would like to then do is to present to you the results of this analysis. And by way of presentation, I was going to take you through a bit of the background of the framework itself, But I realize we don't have that much time. So I'll probably skip or run through that framework very quickly, just to give you a sense of what that framework is about. And then I'll zero in on the results of the analysis using the tool that we developed. The results of analysis of at the SADC regional level of financing for agroecology. And I'll do the same thing for Zimbabwe. And lastly, I'll do the same thing for Malawi. Now, in terms of the background, and this is where I said I'm going to run through very quickly, because I think the previous presentations have done quite a bit of justice in this area in terms of explaining what agroecology or what the agroecological approach means. And so I won't go too much into detail about it. I think there's been sufficient discussions around it. But let me just say that, and I'm hoping that once we've been able to share the presentations, you'll then be able to read and maybe understand a bit better some of the concepts that have been outlined today. In the tables that I'm going to skip through now, what we have attempted to do is to give hopefully a tangible example of, for instance, what diversity means. And in this instance, for instance, we're talking about intercropping, crop rotation, crop livestock integration, biodiversity, mixed grazing, market diversification, and so on and so forth. So what we have attempted to do here in this presentation is to give you some practical examples of what each of these elements, and these are the FAO 10 elements that define agroecological approach. So we've tried to define that for you, and I will just skip through those. You will have all 10 of them described to some degree, each and every one of them. Now, FAO, having identified these 10 elements, which was great in terms of the agroecological approach, there was further work that was looked into, and a different, maybe let me not say a different opinion, but a different approach to agroecology arose. And there are quite a number of studies in between and quite a number of contributors to agroecology that I won't go into. The Glisman's framework, the FAO framework, and quite a number of other frameworks have been developed. But let me zero in on the HLPE, which is the high-level panel of experts in the food security and of the United Nations. They sat down to say, so what do we take of the 10 elements that the FAO had come up with of agroecology in principle? And they came up with 13 principles. And what we have done in this presentation, and I won't, unfortunately, go through it in great detail, is to match the FAO 10 elements to the HLPE 13 elements. Now, I'm saying we're raising this from the perspective that the framework that we have developed is based on these 13 HLPE elements. And so the framework to analyze financing for agroecology will or are based on the 13 elements. So in other words, we will look at a program that the Ministry of Agriculture or any ministry or any government or any donor has put forward. And we start going through that particular program to analyze and say and to identify to what level it talks about recycling, to what level it talks about input reduction, soil health, and so on. Now, one of the previous presenters made a very valid point in that most of our policies, most of our frameworks do not identify agroecology specifically or explicitly. And this is because they were done some years back, and agroecology has sort of, let me say, raised its head in terms of its context a bit more recently. although it's a traditional, as Dr. Dlamini has mentioned, a traditional way of doing agriculture. And as such, including the regional agriculture policy, it does not explicitly mention agroecology. However, when you start going through these elements in all those programs and frameworks, you can begin to see that those frameworks talk to agroecology without explicitly mentioning the term agroecology. And so this is what we were now looking for in the framework to say, as a government, as a region, we know that agroecology is not explicit in most of our frameworks. But what can we do to understand a bit better of what we are doing as nations towards promoting agroecology? And therefore, our framework looks at these 13 different elements to say, do they exist? Do they not exist? And if they exist, we give them a rating through the a rating process that we developed in the framework. So these are the 13 principles that we have used in developing this framework. In the framework, what we also did was to try and capture through the indicators or examples of indicators, some of the key elements that you could find in either parliamentary programs or ministerial programs or donor programs. So just giving a quick example of the input reduction principle, which is principle number two. What is it when you read a document? What is it that you can think of that relates to agroecology? And through a lot of literature review that we came up with, that we went through, these are some of the four elements or key elements that we came up with. And by the way, as I say, this is a draft framework. And so it is still subject to further review and input from various stakeholders to make sure that it becomes a very robust tool. But taking the example of number two, input reduction, what we're looking for in a program or a project document is discussion around water use efficiencies. Does it talk about water use efficiency? Does it talk about water harvesting, drip irrigation, on-farm water storage, those kinds of things? And now what you begin to realize is that this is not just about the Minister of Agriculture. It's also about the Minister of Lands. It's also about the Minister of Infrastructure. It's also about various other ministries that participate in the ecosystem of agriculture. So we don't want to limit ourselves to just the Minister of Agriculture. We want to go beyond and say, what is infrastructure talking about irrigation? What is environment, Minister of Environment and Tourism talking about some of these elements and so on? And we bring those in because agroecology is not just about the Minister of Agriculture. It's everyone. I think, Dr. Dlamini, you mentioned it's an ecosystem. We really need to look at it extremely broadly rather than narrowly as Minister of Agriculture. And I think this is where a body like you, parliamentarians, come into play as an important element, because you are exposed to not just one ministry, but you're exposed to everything that happens in an economy. And it is important, therefore, that when you look at this and you put it as a template, when you're reviewing parliamentary issues, to say, well, okay, this relates to this one, this relates ministry. What are you doing about this? What are you doing about the other? Because it's an ecosystem that we're developing. So input reduction, reduce or eliminate dependency on synthetic inputs. This is not to say do away with, but it's saying we need to start thinking cost-wise, efficiency-wise. And here, when you use the perspective or the lens of the smallholder farmer, what can he afford? What can they be supported with? You all know we've put a lot of money into our subsidies, into fertilizer subsidies, and the results or the reports that are coming out are that
maybe we are not doing as well as we should, we thought we would do. So what else can we do to help our farming community, our agriculture, do better instead of putting more money into inputs? This is not to say it's not important, but what we're saying is there may need to be a transition, a shift to a more integrated system rather than a monosystem, which says hybrid fertilizer, that's the way to go. Reduced waste losses on harvesting, processing, storage, and so on. Reduced on-farm or supply chain energy use. Again, we touch the Minister of Energy. It's so important for the Minister of Energy in our countries to be involved in these processes. Putting or providing energy at the farm, level helps with many other activities. But is it just the traditional energy supply through the power lines? Or should we also not be talking about renewable energy, biogas energy, all those kinds of energy generating activities? To what extent are we promoting those activities, which at the end of the day will result in agroecology being supported? So I think in a nutshell, to simply say that we need to look at agroecology in a very broad sense, both spatially, geographically, and in terms of the concepts, in terms of the ministerial coverage, to simply, or rather than simply thinking about the Minister of Agriculture. So we go through all 13 of them, and we have identified some indicators. Unfortunately, due to time, I won't be able to go through with you every single one of them, but you, I'm sure, will have time to be able to see these indicators. So those are the indicators we've come up with for the 13 products. But again, as I say, this is work in progress, and we welcome any critique, any reviews that will help us improve on this instrument. So having put together this instrument, what we have done is to do an analysis at the SADC Secretariat level to say to what extent is the SADC Secretariat or the SADC region at that regional level supporting finance for agriculture. And this is the result of an analysis that we have done. Now, I need to qualify this and say that this is a result of analysis that was done on 12 programs or projects. Now, the result will be different the more other projects that you analyze. Unfortunately, due to sometimes availability of information or lack of availability of programs and data and information, some of which sometimes is considered to be too confidential, you can only analyze what you've got available. Now, at the SADC Secretariat level, what came out very clearly is that the regional level is focused on input reduction. Maybe not so much the reduction in inorganic fertilizer and more organic fertilizer, but it's been a lot more on subsidies towards input, towards inputs. In our framework, we call it input reduction. But at the regional level, what we're saying is there's a lot of focus that is on inputs. The second area that the regional focus looks at is land and natural resources governance. That's another area that at the regional level, there's effort that is being done or being put to land and natural resources governance. In other words, when you read the documents of the frameworks of SADC, there's generally always mention or always focus or interventions that are aligned to land or aligned to inputs or aligned to social health. What this does is the more you come to the outer circle, the more mention of that particular elements or those elements I talked about, the indicators, they are in the document. The closer you come to the circle, the less of any of those indicators are talked about in a particular project. So we do this analysis over 10 projects. or programs, as it were, and then we put them, we calculate and put it together and end up with this graph that you're now seeing. Maybe this will make a little bit more sense when we come to the country level, in the sense that at the SADC level, the idea was to be able to say, so how much money regionally is being put towards input reduction? How much investment is being put towards soil health and so on? Now, we were not able to do this at the regional level for one main reason. The main reason being that, or two main reasons, SADC, to start with, develops programs and frameworks that are implemented at the national level. So whilst you have a program at the regional level, ordinarily does not get as much funding because the idea is that it gets funding at the national level. So most of the money elements are at the national level rather than at the regional level. The regional level is high level. It's the policy and political framework that then is implemented at the national level. And then those that were implemented at the regional level, sometimes it was quite difficult to disintegrate and dissociate how much was meant for which country and so on and so forth. So there were a few difficulties that we're still trying to iron out so that the next iteration of this report, we are able to report a bit better than what we're doing now. The sort of recommendations that we came up with, this is at the regional level.
Sorry, Mr. Presenter.
Yes, indeed.
I think you might also be considering winding up because you have already taken 20 minutes.
Okay, thank you. All right. What we've done, thank you, Chair. What we have done is to give a number of recommendations with regards to what needs to be done at the regional level. And I think just to echo what our colleagues in SAF talked about, the third point is about the results of analysis that was done by the African Union on the biannual reporting. And here it is clear that the mandate or the commitment to providing at least 10% of our national budgets to agriculture is hardly being met by most of our member states. In 2022, Seychelles was on the road to meeting that. Egypt, Eswatini, and Zambia. The rest of our countries are nowhere near being able to meet this particular commitment by 2025. And so in terms of our agriculture, we have difficulties. The results of Zimbabwe, the analysis that we did in Zimbabwe are as follows. There's a lot of participation, and this has actually come from the involvement of smallholder farmers, particularly, for instance, in projects or programs such as the Pumvuza, which has now targeted more the stakeholder or the end user. And so participation has come out quite strongly in that case. Biodiversity also has come out very strongly in the case of Zimbabwe and input reduction. Sorry, out of time. Here again, I have outlined some of the key takeaways from the Zimbabwe case. And just to mention that Zimbabwe's National Agriculture Policy Framework 2019 to 2030 is one document that clearly, and we've quoted that document, and it says the process of enhancing agricultural productivity and production must be anchored in sustainable production systems based on agroecology. So the government of Zimbabwe has committed itself in writing, in a policy statement, to agroecology. And there are other areas. Now, please bear in mind, we were only doing an analysis of Zimbabwe. Chances are other countries have done similarly. But this is just the result of what we were doing. Malawi. Here, we've shown you a different way of reporting on those results rather than that graph. In this instance, we can use this type of graph. But again, with Malawi, you can see co-creation of knowledge is very, very strong. Participation is very strong. connectivity is very strong. Some of these areas are not as strong. Now, this is based on information disaggregated off the national budget. This is the money that Parliament of Malawi allocated to agriculture. The next one is based on projects. These are like ODA projects to Malawi. So we've got two results that are coming out of Malawi. One is the national budget. The other one is ODA support to Malawi. And the results are pretty much similar. Let me say that with regards to Malawi, the national budget of 2022-23 financial year indicated that approximately 20% of the funds that have been allocated to from the budget were towards sub-programs of agroecological approach, which is good. I mean, we're moving somewhere, but obviously we need to improve a lot more on that. On that basis, and I apologize, I've gone a little bit too far on my time, but this is an instrument that we have available that we will continue to spruce up, and it will become more and more used for purposes of supporting your work in analyzing where money is being put forward. Che, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mochao. And Dr. Louis Hove, over to you for your presentation, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for giving FAO the opportunity to address you. Please allow me to share my screen.
Yes, please.
I'm very much cognizant of the time that is a constraint at the moment, and I'll try to summarize because the previous speakers have spoken quite a lot about what I wanted to say. I'm Louis Ole from the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, and we lead the world's fight against hunger, while at the same time making sure that the environment is protected. We've just developed a new strategic framework that is 2022 to 2031. And it's really anchored around better production, better nutrition, better environment, and a better life for all, leaving no one behind. And it is this strategy that really encompasses and encourages what we are discussing today, which is agroecology, when we are talking about better production and better life. I would like to just quickly take you through, because a lot has been said about the rationale for agroecology. I think the previous speakers have put it very clearly why we need agroecology. Because our food systems, our agri-food systems are broken. They're inequitable and they're vulnerable, not just to climate change, but to other externalities. We've seen what COVID did to the agri-food systems. The economic meltdowns that we have in most of the countries of the Southern Africa region. We have seen the impact of the floods that we are having right now here in South Africa. All these are really the externalities that affect the food systems that we have and that are based on industrial production, as other colleagues were referring to it. We are also cognizant of the fact that agriculture contributes to greenhouse gas emissions. Up to 30% of the emissions come from agriculture. The panel that has been referred to already, the high-level panel of experts on agriculture, on food security and nutrition, in 2019 made this very important statement that transforming food system by applying ecological principles to agriculture and ensuring a regenerative use of natural resources and ecosystems, while also addressing the need for socially equitable food systems in which people can exercise choice over what they eat and how and where it is produced. This is a very important statement that was made by this panel, and it's driving, is really giving us direction to approaches like agroecology. It is an innovative approach. It's not the only one. It is one of the most important what we have, what we need to be using. And I just want to go back to what some honorable members were asking if agroecology has been with us, which is the case, it has been with African farmers and pastoralists for many years, for millions of years. What we are doing now is we are saying it should be promoted to produce more than it could in the past. And it can happen. It can be done. We can change the systems. It depends. Everything depends on the ecosystems that are viable, that are healthy. And it takes time to build those systems. It doesn't happen overnight. That's why you heard previous speakers saying we need at least 5 years. It takes time to build the ecosystems, which are the basis for agroecological production. So what I'm going to talk about is what FAO does in this space. And we are one of the promoters of agroecology globally. You are members, all the countries of SADC are members of the FAO. And we as a secretariat, we are promoting, providing policy and technical capacity building for agroecology. There are 10 elements that have been clearly and eloquently put across by the previous speakers. I'm not going to go to that. I'm just going to touch on the responsible governance, which I think is more relevant to you as members of parliament. And here we are very much aware that the land resources, the natural resources, are the resources that sustain the lives of at least maybe 70% of the people of Southern Africa. And we need to make sure that we have a transparent, accountable, and inclusive governance mechanism at all levels. It was mentioned before. So we need policies, legislation, and programs that reward sustainable approaches such as agroecology. That is the role of parliamentarians, if I can put it in short. We need you to be able to make sure that the policies and programs that the governments put out are rewarding sustainable management of natural resources and sustainable production like agroecology. So for you to do that, you need evidence. You need the evidence. You need the evidence to show that these things work. This approach is profitable. This approach is ecologically sound. This approach is economically sound, is financially sound. And that's where FAO support is focused on at the moment, looking at developing tools that member states can use to, and the partners can use to try and quantify the impacts of adopting agroecology. It's about transition. We're not talking about, it's not a switch like we are moving from this today and tomorrow. It's a transition. It will take time to move from what we are entrenched into already, like Dr. Dlamini said. There will be resistance from moving away from where we are now. And we need to accept that, and we need to work with evidence, with advocates, work together and make sure that everyone is understood, build the capacities to be able to do this. Evidence is there that agroecology farmers generate high income, economic values, producing more, creating more wealth, and generating higher levels of income. The environmental benefits are so many. The social benefits are many because it's participatory, it's inclusive. Women empowerment and nutrition are really usually taken care of. It is a solution. It is definitely an important weapon in fight against climate change, the impacts of climate change. And the evidence is there. I'm not going to go into the details, but we've done studies, looked at the global data, and tried to see how agroecology is matching up in terms of addressing the impacts of climate change. A few countries in Africa were included in this, but what is very clear is that agroecological approaches build resilience through increased adaptive capacity and reduce the vulnerability to agroecosystems. What we are seeing is that as you practice this over time, and it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. Over time, as you practice the right approaches, right principles, you get your system to be resilient. They can adapt to climate change, and you build the resilience within systems that they can cope with the changing climate. And it's, as I said earlier on, it's around soil health, biodiversity, and overall diversity, which you can achieve at the same time maintaining your production. It also has benefits in terms of mitigation. This global study actually shows that 17 countries, just 12%, explicitly mention agroecology as one of their climate action strategies. So what is happening elsewhere is that the United Nations Food Systems Summit that was held last year, which was a big event, trying to see how the world can reconfigure the food systems, which are broken, which are inequitable, which are not including all the vulnerable groups. How can they be more inclusive? How can they be more sustainable? And they have recognized agroecology as an important tool to be addressing these issues. As a result of the importance of agroecology, a global coalition on agroecology has been created. And at the moment, only two countries from Africa are part of that, from Southern Africa, sorry, are part of that, Madagascar and Tanzania, and DRC. My apologies, because in FAO, DRC goes to Central Africa, but it's part of SADC. DRC, Madagascar, and Tanzania, and the African Union Commission have joined this coalition. And this coalition is just about scaling up actions to meet global challenges for sustainable food systems through agroecology. The World Committee, the Committee on World Food Security, which I was referred to earlier on, is also endorsed agroecology as one of the ways to. So you are not alone if you go into agroecology. The global movement is there, which is pushing, which is encouraging the use of agroecological approaches to food production. It is important that you feel that there is evidence for you to learn from elsewhere, from the globe, within the continent, and even within the Southern Africa region. Just to maybe this might inspire you that in West Africa, ECOWAS has already gone forward and they've asked FAO to support them in developing an regional investment program for agroecological transition. Some honorable members in this meeting actually asked what does it mean in terms of dollars and cents? And this is exactly what it is, what we are doing with West Africa in ECOWAS, trying to help them to put a program that would assist the farmers to transition from the current conventional to the agroecological approach. So there's also to help with all that, there's an alliance for agroecology in West Africa, which is supported by ECOWAS. And the Green Great Wall Initiative, which is about greening, stopping the desertification from going any further from where it is now, is in the Sahel, is also has got a lot of work around agroecology. And these are initiatives that are starting to happen in Southern Africa. FAO is the assisted study to develop a regional strategy on the Green Great Wall, and this will be useful in terms of getting agroecology. I would just like also to point out that the Portuguese-speaking countries launched a training center in São Tomé and Príncipe for sustainable farming, and it offers specific training on agroecology for instructors. There was also the multi-stakeholder regional dialogue on maintaining diversity, biodiversity, which is a critical element of agroecology. FAO, the Convention on Biological Diversity, and the African Union Commission, Rwandan government came together, and they flagged agroecology as one of the solutions to biological diversity. I also want to announce that there's going to be a global seminar on this on the 18th and 19th of May, and we are all invited. If you have time, you can contact us in FAO. We can give you the link to join that. It's going to discuss targeting policymakers and politicians globally. What is it that we can do to promote agroecology? So what do we need to do to make sure that we can at least have agroecology scaled up in Southern Africa? Because that's the way to go. If you are going to produce food in a sustainable manner and also in an ecologically sound, you need to have agroecology as part of the solutions. There's need for investment in participatory farmer-centered research. I think it has been mentioned. I want to just reinforce this, that the research that is participatory, that includes every stakeholder, including private sector, including researchers, the traditional researchers, linking with the producers, the government institutions, because agroecology is very much context-specific. You are not going to have a blanket, one-size-fits-all across the countries. Each ecological environment requires its own solutions, and that needs research. With the results of the research, with the evidence that you have, we need to have a lot of, in terms of education and knowledge transfer, including with honorable members, giving them all the data they need to be able to eloquently and advocate for agroecology. We are not talking just about education. We are talking university, vocational education, farmer and informal producer and farmer trainings. All these need to be encouraged. Farmer groups, farmer training centers. We need to do as much as we can in terms of education and knowledge transfer. Some things have already been mentioned. I think they need to be smart. They need to be really targeted to make sure that they are supporting the right things, that's encouraging sustainable production with agroecology. And we need not just to think about it for subsistence. It is for markets. Let's look at territorial markets, value addition, value chains that are embracing the 10 principles that FAO, the 13 principles that the HLP, the high level panel has also put across. So we see a role of the you honorable members in advocacy, in the crafting of the right policies, the right programs that the governments can implement, and using the resources to be able to in the right way to make sure that we produce in a sustainable manner and with agroecology. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to our presenters who have presented on the second session. And it's now open for a primary. If members may wish to comment, or if not, we may be heading towards winding up. I see a hand from Ms. Atini. You've got the floor. Honorable.
Thank you very much for the two presentations, eye-opening. But I just want to get clarity or be assured that the instrument or the framework of the instrument they are talking about that has FOA support process for ensuring we're all embraced, not just, I don't know if you say regional level, but SADC as it were, would involve national countries within SADC. I'm just wondering what the process would be to ensure that we're all involved and we embrace whatever the final output of the analysis is. Secondly, it's just being inquisitive. Looks like we're not doing very well on the Malabo Declaration, the 10%. Very few of us are just doing well. What could be the reason? One is not really questioning how that declaration came about. And then it raises all sorts of questions why we can't meet it if it's meetable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Any other hands? I see a hand from Honorable from the Kingdom of Lesotho.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine is a very quick one. Aligning myself with the question that's just been presented. Regarding the Malabo Protocol, the presenters earlier on indicated that transforming into this agroecology could somewhat be addressing the challenge that we're having with meeting the targets of the Malabo Protocol, particularly on the 10%. Now, understanding that agroecology. Thank you. Understanding that the agroecology sort of helps us to make better use of our finances. Would they be alluding to the fact that introducing it would now sort of reduce or lower the targets that we have on the Malabo principles, or it's simply saying we still have to pull up our targets to that level, despite the fact that the productivity would be increased with this new technology. Thank you. The new old technology. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member from the Kingdom of Lesotho. Any other Honorable Members? All right. And then I'm going to give it to the presenters. We're going to start with Mr. Martin Mucholo, and then we're going to go to Dr. Louis Hove, if he has got any other comment. Over to you, presenter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the questions that have been raised. I will attempt a response, but I'm sure my colleague also, Joel Mzinga, will be able to provide some insight as well, especially when it comes to Malabo Declaration, and potentially also Louis Hoy. With regards to whether the framework is supported by FAO, the instrument that we're developing with it supported by FAO, and what processes are envisaged with regards to its further development, but also, if I heard it correctly, the analysis and consultations on the results of that that come from that framework. The response is that there are quite a number of tools and instruments that are used to identify how much funding is allocated or earmarked for agriculture, but more specifically for agroecology. I think in Mr. Louis Hove's presentation, you may have seen on the right-hand side a picture with the name TAPE on it, TAP. That's actually a tool that FAO has also developed that monitors financing actions and interventions that lead to agroecology. And I'm sure Mr. Hove will be able to speak more authoritatively on that one. But the point is that the instrument that we have developed is an attempt at developing a user-friendly instrument, because some of the instruments are quite intensive in terms of their input requirements, technical requirements, in order for those results to be obtained from those tools. And so ActionAid was looking for something that is practicable, that is usable, that is user-friendly, that can give a quick overview of the environment with regards to financing for agroecology. And so they commissioned this work that Stephen Greenberg and myself have been involved in. And this is like the first time we're making presentations of the results that are coming out of this framework. Not knowing how ActionAid would want to be progressing with this, but we see an environment where certainly the instrument needs to be further discussed, further elaborated with various key stakeholders in the various countries, as well as institutions such as FAO and many others that have developed their own tools as well, to see how practical this instrument is. So what I can say at this point in time is that it's work in progress, and hopefully as we finish off the work, ActionAid, unfortunately I can't speak on their behalf, would look to see how widely spread or how widely consulted this instrument can be put to. Then with regards to the Malabo Declaration, I think the questions that that came up were, why is it that we seem not to be doing very well? My colleague Joe will probably have some answers here, but let me offer two possible answers. The first is that as member countries, as member states, we have not put sufficient effort to generating information because the results of the Malabo Declaration are based on the information that the country provides. With regards to percentages of, or with regards to expenditure in any particular, on any particular indicator. Information has been very difficult to come by. And so this is an element in an area where we need to spend a bit more effort in generating information, but not just generating information, but also in reporting. Let me, and I may be stepping out of my comfort zone here, but let me also reflect and say in relation to this piece, to this issue of information, that the SADC Secretariat some time back developed what they referred to as the M&E online system, the Monitoring and Evaluation Online System, which member states are supposed to report on. And some of that information is similar to what is required to generate information for the Malabo Declaration. Most member states are not reporting on the SADC M&E online system. And when I say most, out of the 16, and this is information that was made available as of last year, so it's not as current, out of 16 member states, I think only 3 member states are reporting on that online system. So the issue then is that with the Malabo Declaration commitments, they depend on information that is generated or coming from member states. And if we're not, as member states, generating that information, the result is that our scoring is affected and negatively affected. So I think there's need to improve on information provision, and maybe our colleague Mr. Hove could also talk to issues of information with regards to what the FAO are doing in supporting country stats or the development of country stats in some of our member countries. The other area also of the Malabo Declaration, and the reason why we're not maybe meeting some of our targets is, again, the lack of understanding sometimes, let me put it that way, or rather maybe lack of focus on what those commitments are. And what they are intended to. The commitment by member states to spend at least 10% of their national budgets on agriculture has reported, we're not on track. And this is to say 10% of the budget to go into issues such as research and development. Research and development, and we've got our colleague here, Dr. Lamin, I'm sure can say, research and development, funding for research and development has been going down since most of our countries became independent. We're not putting money into investment. In other words, we're not looking to the future. We're looking at the current. And rather than the future, and research and development is more about the future. The 10% is intended to go into infrastructure for agriculture. It's intended to go into various activities for agriculture, in support of agriculture, marketing, infrastructure, and so on and so forth. But it appears that we are not, as member states, we are not supporting some of those activities as we have committed and signed off on the Malabo Declaration at the African continent level. My colleagues may be able to answer some of that. Now, a very good question that came up to say, if we go agroecology, will we still need 10% to be allocated to the budget? I think the answer is yes, because on average, in SADC region, I think we are averaging about 5% aggregate of our national budget is going to agriculture. That 5%, and it is reflected in the agriculture growth, annual growth rate per year, which is less than half of the 6% that was targeted. So it's a clear reflection that we have not been supporting, or sorry, we have not been providing the necessary financial backing that will allow for agricultural growth as envisaged under the CADAP. So the answer, I think, is still yes, we need to spend more on agroecology, because it goes into a lot of the other things that farmers require. Infrastructure, as I say, market and market infrastructure, linkages of farmers to the market, price discovery mechanisms for the farmers, storage for the farmers, and so on and so forth. So it is still, there's still a big need for us to increase up that 10%. Chair, I apologize, I took a little bit longer. Let me hand over to you.
No, thank you very much. And I would like to hear from Dr. Lewis, how, if he has got any comment.
Thank you, Chair. I think my colleague has covered most of the questions that were put across by the honorable members. But I just want to mention that the FAO is working with the governments to try and improve the statistics and information systems. And that's exactly what we are doing in the SADC region and globally as well, where we're trying to make sure that this information that you are talking about, we are talking about, that we need for to understand these changes, these investments. FAO is working with the government to make sure that that data is available. I'm not going to go into the details. But I just want also to support the fact that even if you are going to adopt agroecology, we still need investment in agriculture. And the reason being, the transitioning is not as straightforward. It's not like a switch where you just turn and the next day you're doing this. There's a lot of capacity building. There's a lot of investment that is required in infrastructure. And the private sector has to change their systems if they're going to support the agroecological approach to producing food. And that is requires investments. And we still need a lot of investment in agriculture if you're going to go the agroecology route. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Is there any other burning question that would like to ask? All right. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Having come this far, I now invite the Chairperson of the Standing Committee on Trade, Industrial Finance and Investments to deliver the closing remarks. I thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And good evening to everyone. I am honored to finally deliver the closing remarks as we come to a close of this session on expanding investment in agroecology in the Southern Africa for sustainable development and climate adaptation. I'm offering a special appreciation to our resource persons who are willing to share with us their vast knowledge and experience on the important and new aspect of agroecology, albeit it being an old and indigenous phenomenon. I also take this opportunity to express my sincere gratitude to you, honorable members, for having spent so much time to attend this meeting on a Sunday up to this time. I also thank you for applying yourselves fully and actively engaging with the resource persons on this important subject of investment in agriculture. It does show your desire and commitment to acquiring the requisite knowledge and skills to enable you to contribute positively towards the national and regional food security as well as the climate adaptation. Now, honorable members, having finally concluded all the items on our agenda, I am happy to note that we have now gained a greater understanding of what agroecology is and some of its advantages as compared to the conventional high input and industrialized agricultural system. I'm also pleased that the presenters have not only highlighted the many regional and continental commitments towards the agricultural sector, but also the fact that funding to the sector should be adequate and sustainable, as we've just discussed. This is especially important for us so that going forward, we can do everything within our ambits to address the food security concerns in the region and, of course, our respective countries. I know we've already identified the glaring opportunity to kickstart the process of policy change vis-a-vis agriculture with this emerging dynamics. And even if 5 years in the least may not be enough to yield results, we must harness indigenous technology to maximize agro-opportunities for our region. The new knowledge is very important that agroecology over industrial agriculture can lead us to the attainment of SDGs. We have an important role to play, not only to ensure increased budgetary allocation towards agroecology, but also promote private sector investment. But as we do close, I commend you, Secretary General in absentia, and the staff of SADC Parliamentary Forum for convening this very fruitful meeting. It is now my singular honor to declare the joint meeting officially closed. I wish you all safe travel back home. Thank you.